Hello, welcome to Books in the Biz, a podcast that looks at both the financial and operational sides of success. Please welcome our hosts, Dan Paulson and Richard Veltre. Dan is the CEO of Envision Development International, and he works with leaders to increase sales and profits through great cultures with solid operations. Rich is CEO of the Veltre Group and a financial strategist working with companies to manage their money more effectively. Now on to
Hello again, Alice. Welcome to Books in the Biz. We're still trying to figure out our technology. Rich, how are you doing?
I am good, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful as we approach this holiday season. It's kind of nice, kind of getting closer to Christmas time. However, it is a little bit cold up here in the Great White North. I don't know how it is out in New York. Are you experiencing? Oh, 20 below here, my friend. 20 below here. You beat that.
No,
you
got we don't have that. We don't have that.
All right. Well, I wanted to bring in a guest today. So we have Patrick McAdams. Pat, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. It's pretty cold here, too. I know you're up near the Madison area. I'm near Milwaukee, and yep. I woke up to 2 below 0 this morning.
So. Oh, lovely, lovely weather. So the only thing I can think of that would warm us all up is money and selling yes. businesses and buying businesses and for us working on businesses so they can help make more money on selling their businesses. But that's kind of why I want to talk to you, because you have a background in that, and you also have a background pretty unique background, actually. So I wanted to kind of learn a little bit more about what you do prior to buying and selling businesses.
Well, I grew up in a family of entrepreneurs on both sides of my family. My mom's dad, he owned a small structural engineering firm. And then my grandfather on my dad's side was in the grocery business. My great-grandfather started as a small little butcher shop, and my grandpa took it over. And then between he and my aunts and uncles, they grew it to 7 large, very large stores, and they sold back in 2005. So I worked for them for a while. I spent 7 years in corporate America doing IT work and hated every minute of it after growing up in a small business and, you know, having a lot of independence and, you know, just being in a family business is way different than being in corporate America. So I started looking for an opportunity and my wife and I bought a budget blinds franchise, ran that for about 14 and a half years, finally got sick of just the overall general business. It's a tough business when you're doing the sales day in and day out and you're working, you know, anywhere from 70 to 90 hours a week. And I just said, you know what? I think I'm about done with this and decide to sell it. And that was like 9 of the longest months of my life. and after I finished up, I took my attorney golfing as a thank you for all the hard work he put in, because we hit some real big glitches along the way. And after we were done, I said, you know, Chad, is there an easier way to sell a business? And he said, yeah, you could have hired a business broker. I'm like, well, why are you telling me that now? And so I started researching the industry, and with his help, I talked to a couple different brokerages. Most of the other franchises that were out there they didn't have any territories available in my area. And I stumbled across Murphy Business Sales, and they're based out of Clearwater, Florida. And I started talking with them, doing my research, and after going down and meeting with the corporate team with my wife, I said, yeah, this is gonna be a really good fit for me. So we pulled the trigger, and I think it was October of 2019, went to training, came back, and then COVID hit. So my first 2 years in business brokerage were not a very good experience, but here I am today making it, and I really enjoy the business. So.
Well, you survived. That's good. So are you a partner in the business, or is this a franchise as well? How is this structured?
So we're a franchise, and Murphy Business has about 150 offices nationwide. We have around 275 total brokers. So what they do is they provide ongoing support for us. They've got a pretty good business model in terms of they've got really good training, really good marketing, and they just have a really good process for helping us find and identify good businesses, onboarding them, and then getting them sold.
Got it. Good. Rich, I'm sure you are full of questions since you're the finance guy. I'll let you take over from here.
So So you're, as a broker, is there any particular industry you focus on? Do you, you know?
No, I get that question a lot, Rich. And really and truthfully, what I do is I look for good cash flowing businesses. And if you're making money, you have, you know, I usually tell business owners, if they have at least 5 to 6 employees that are there, that are good employees and that will stay on with the business, that we can most likely find you a buyer. The ones that are really tough are obviously businesses that have no cash flow. You know, they're breaking even or they're losing money. I actually just got off call with a lady earlier today that she owns a unique wedding or a unique business in the wedding industry. And she hasn't actually run the business in 2 years due to some health issues and stuff. And I'm like, so what do you have to offer? And she's like, well, I've got inventory machinery. I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you. what I'll tell you is I don't typically do like gas stations, hotels, convenience stores. And I also, if you have a business where you're putting a lot of cash through the business because you don't want to pay taxes, it's going to be really hard to sell.
Right.
Okay. So pretty industry agnostic. But if you have a good solid business with clean books and records, and you've got a good reputation, you've been in business for, I'd say, 5+ years, I can probably help you find a buyer.
Okay. Any trends that you're seeing as far as, I don't think so much on the seller side. I think I'm more interested on the buyer side. There seems to be a lot of trends out there for people who, you know, an exploding market is the entrepreneur through acquisition market. ETA yep. market. So you're probably bombarded because that's about all I see anymore are these people that just like, hey, I'm just going to go buy a business. You know, I just got out of school and I'm going to go run a business because I know what I'm doing. And I sit there and I go, okay, if that's the way you want to go. You know, I start to sound like my father-in-law, you know, okay, that's what you think you're going to do. It's all right. But you know, any trends that you seem to see, you know, what are you seeing in the market?
So it's interesting. I get a lot of search funders, you know, a lot of people that have no industry experience. I probably get, 10 to 15 phone calls a week from people that, you know, they're whatever. I had a guy that's a pharmaceutical rep call me the other day. You know, he's in his 30s and he's looking for a business to buy with his business partner. And I'm like, okay, well, what's your experience? I sell pharmaceutical drugs. I'm like, okay, well, what kind of business do you want to buy? Oh, I want to buy a manufacturing business. Okay. What big one do you want to buy? Oh, I want something with at least $5 million in revenue. Okay. So how much do you have to invest? I don't have anything. I'm like going, okay. Yeah. So then I'm like, well, have you talked to an SBA lender yet? Or how are you going to finance the deal? Well, I'm looking for seller financing. And, you know, I kind of chuckle because I'm like, okay, let me ask you a question. I'm like, so if you owned a business and you had somebody coming to you that has zero experience whatsoever, and they want you to sell or finance like 95% of the business, what would your answer be? Well, I tell them to go pound sand.
And there's your sign.
And I'm like, okay, well, there's your sign from God. So, wow. You know, so we get a lot of those. But we also get, you know, I'm seeing more people that are calling that have corporate jobs that are, you know, older, you know, like me, 50 years old, that want to get out of corporate America. Maybe they've been in it for a while and they're looking for a change in their life. And so what they're doing is they're trying to find a business that matches their skill set. You know, I've got a gentleman that was in the automotive manufacturing industry for a long time, and he's looking for something in manufacturing. It doesn't necessarily have to be in automotive, but you know, something along those lines. He's got experience in it. You know, I've got a couple of people that just have really good management experience, and they're looking for like a B2B type of business where they can, you know, do some sales, manage their workforce, manage clients. So I'm seeing more people like that coming out of the woodwork. And I think with now that the election's over and that interest rates are starting to come down, because we were seeing interest rates were so high that it was really hurting business valuations. And so it was keeping people from buying businesses, number one. And then number two, people wanting to sell businesses because, you know, if your business was worth, you know, let's say $1 million 3 years ago, with interest rates, that value dropped, you know, in there was a direct correlation with the interest rates. You know, if you had an interest rate prior with SBA that was 6%, now it's 10%, that's going to hurt your bottom line. Yeah. And so we're starting to see more buyers that way that are, they're looking to get out of corporate America. They've got good experience. And, you know, they think that there's room for to find businesses for those people. And then there's also private equity is dipping down a little bit lower into business purchases. I was just talking to a broker the other day that he sold a business with only like, I think it had $320,000 in EBITDA, and he had a private equity firm buy it. And the reason being is that it was a good add-on to their business. It was, you know, just, it was going to complement something they have, and they could see the long-term potential of marketing it and, you know, growing it, because the owner just, you know, the owner was tired. He was old. He didn't have, you know, he didn't have the gumption to go out and try and grow the business anymore, which, you know, that's one of the things that we see with a lot of sellers, that they're coasting. They're not doing anything to improve their business or grow it. They're just, you know, they're making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year and they're happy with it.
Right. So you mentioned VC and PE. Are they back in the market? I mean, there was a long time there where it seemed like, I wouldn't say they were out of the market, but the percentage of the deals that they were doing was really vacant. They were missing. They just weren't coming in and putting the cash in. It was almost like they were stockpiling cash. And at some point, everybody expected that they were going to come in and just kind of flood the market again. And I haven't seen it, but I'm curious from your side.
No, I haven't seen it either. And from talking to other brokers, we haven't seen much of it either. however, there's a lot of sentiment that coming in 2025, we're going to see them starting to slowly re-enter the markets and start to invest in small companies, you know, anywhere from, you know, let's call it, you know, 3 to 5 million in revenue up to 25 to 30 million in revenue. I think, you know, you've got a lot of money there. You've got a lot of people in the private equity side that they've got to get a return on investment for their investors. And so what are they going to do with that money? And I think as we get more clarification politically next year, I think that's going to help. You know, the one thing that worries me is if you look at, you know, look at the automotive world and you see car sales are starting to slow down. People aren't buying as many new cars. You see just in general, the economy seems to be, it's not sputtering, but it's not cranking either. It's just kind of going along right now. And I don't know what's going to happen like with the manufacturing engine in our country right now, because I think about, I've got customers that make small little parts for the automotive industry, and they're slow right now because the automotive manufacturers don't need parts because they're not selling cars. So I don't know, you know, PE loves manufacturing, all different sizes and sorts. And so I don't know if they're going to be looking into other industries. Then I just read a report on, it's a website called Axial, and their deal making website. And they actually talked about how a lot of deals that are being done right now are in technology, healthcare, and business services.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know where it's headed. I mean, literally still, I'm not seeing any change, right? The U.S. economy is driven by the U.S. citizen, by the individual consumer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's like a high percentage, like 70, 75%, something like that is driven by the U.S. consumer. And all of those things you just mentioned are things that scare all of us, because we look at it and go, if they're not buying, it's because they're not making enough money.
Yeah.
They're not buying because there's some other impediment, which interest rates is still, you know, a ridiculous number. You know, you wake up the next day and your credit card, you know, percentage is 39%, and that's on a good credit rating. So
yeah,
you're sitting there saying, well, I wouldn't put anything on there either.
Yeah. Well, that and car prices are now, I think the average car price is $55,000 or $45,000, one of those two. Either way, try and get one, you know, that has any options for that. And most of the cars they're selling are fairly well optioned. Plus, I think, financing for them, even though the interest rates have come down some, I don't think they've changed a whole lot on financing a car. They're still pretty high, and they're just starting to come out with incentives to get people to buy again. But, I mean, in my opinion, they pushed too hard on electric. They forced the auto industry pushed their car values higher because they had to make up for what they were losing on the EVs. So, you know, they're all trying to sell premium cars that are higher margin. And I don't think people have the stomach for a $50,000 to $70,000 car that's going to be your daily commuter.
Yeah. So, and here, I mean, it's just, you know, interest rates drive so much of the productivity in our economy. And, you know, I mean, it's interesting when I've got a buyer that is purchasing a supper club, steakhouse with real estate. It's a pretty large deal, and he had to shop it around. I think he ended up going to four different lenders before he finally was able to settle on one. And I think he's going to, the way the SBA is set up now is that they can blend rates depending on the value of the real estate. And if the real estate has more than 51% value over the business, so let's say the business is $1,000,001 and the real estate is $1,000,002, they can amortize it over 25 years, which is great because that can really stretch out, you know, that stretched out the loan payments, makes it much more affordable. And they made some changes in the SBA rules recently where they can't do that type of blending anymore if the real estate is so much or a certain percentage less the deal. So he's looking at like a 17-year amortization. And so now he's kind of going, huh, what do I do? Do I put more cash into it to make my payments lower? Or do I just go along with it and wait for rates to drop and then I'll refinance it? You know, he really wants to get the deal done. It's a great supper club that just prints money. In fact, the guy I was just talking to the seller the other day, he has best November ever. He's owned it for like 15 years. And so, you know, you see closings of like, you know, Red Lobster and some of these other, you know, TGI Fridays and stuff, but you see a guy like this that just, he's printing money in his business. And it's like, well, what's the difference? You know, why are people spending on the high end, you know, versus, you know, they're not on the low end. But, you know, anyways, you know, you've got buyers, it takes a long time for them to find good financing options because the rates are so high.
Yeah, I think, you know, places like Red Lobster, they get into that corporate structure and all of a sudden, you know, you're paying, you know, $50 for a steak because you got to pay for the CEO. Yeah. More so than if you're looking at a small business that the people just grinded it out and got it to, you know, putting out cash flow.
Yeah.
You know, that's completely worth it. Red Lobster should have turned around and started buying places like that, but you know, I don't think they were smart enough to do it. You know,
no.
They were stuck on the free shrimp or whatever it was, the all you can eat shrimp.
Yeah. Well, we are also like the supper club capital of the world. So,
okay. Well, yeah, we are.
Friday night fish fries or going out for steak, especially in these rural areas. I know because we have a couple of those places around us. They do print money.
Yeah.
Everyone goes there. That's their treat, more so than like Red Lobster or someplace like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. Well, and you can get a good value, great food, and, you know, and interesting menus at a lot of the places too. So, yeah. And usually they couple it with just amazing service. So that's, you know, and that's what, you know, when you're selling a restaurant, that's what makes it for, you know, in fact, most of the time, if you sell a restaurant, the first thing the buyer is going to do before they meet with the owner is they're going to go into the restaurant, have dinner, breakfast, lunch, whatever, see how the service is, see how the food is. And that right there is going to tell them, okay, do I want to buy it? And in this, you know, with this supper club that I've got, the guy went in there, had dinner, and he called me the next morning at 6 o'clock in the morning. I want to put an offer in.
That's so, a good sign.
Yeah, that's a good sign. That's a good sign. So.
Very good sign.
But you know, one thing that's interesting that a lot of people when they're going to sell their business don't realize is that even if interest rates are high, one of the ways that they can help find buyers and attract them and still sell their business and still maintain a high value in their business is by doing seller financing. You know, if you're willing to offer up, you know, if you're willing to be the bank and take, you know, 25 to 35% down and then, you know, do a short-term loan that's amortized over a little bit longer term and take a balloon payment, you know, that can get a lot of buyers attracted to your business. And I'm dealing with a small business right now where I've had a few buyers come in and they're asking for seller financing and it's, you know, it's a small hair salon, you know, they do a really nice job. The lady makes nice money. But it's hard to get a bank to finance a beauty salon. And, you know, I keep telling the seller, I'm like, listen, if you were to take, you know, a third down and finance the rest, you're going to be in good shape. And she's talking about staying on for a year as well. And so I said, well, you know, you're going to be there for a year. You're going to help make sure that this person is doing the right things, being successful. And, you know, once you're a year in, now you're only 2 years out from getting your money back. It's like, you know, you're going to have a pretty good comfort level. So, you know, so we try and, you know, there's little things that we try and coach our clients on that way, just to help them understand the different ways that they can get out. And even if SBA pricing doesn't look good right now, there's other ways around it. So
that's good to know. Now, you started talking about a little bit earlier, and it just prompted me because I had a meeting with my accountant earlier today, and we were kind of talking about the state of business and, you know, talking about what his clients are going through. And one of the interesting things was he said, you know, most of my clients could use help from people like me and Rich. But he said they tightened their purse strings. So they get to $5 million. They don't want to spend any money on it. You know, what would you tell a business when it comes to sale? Because one of the things that we run into, especially talking with people like you, is there's a number of businesses that aren't prepared to sell for a number of reasons. And a lot of it is they either don't have the systems in place or everything is done by the owner, and now the owner leaves and they know they have to replace that talent with somebody else, and that comes at a cost. Mm-hmm. You talk some about the financing, which also impacts that. You know, what are some of the recommendations you would make to a business owner when they are looking at getting out, they want to sell?
Well, the first thing that, you know, we talk about a couple of different things, and what drives value in a business is number one is cash flow. You know, cash is king.
Right.
The more cash flow that the business is generating, the more buyers you're going to attract. But you can have two businesses that are similar, making the same amount of money, but let's say business one is just, they don't have good books and records. They don't have, you know, a very organized workplace in terms of, like, you know, onboarding employees. How do you train your employees? Well, we just throw them in the fire and we let them learn, you know, and some businesses are like that. And then, you know, you've got the second business where they've got great books and records. They've got either a good bookkeeper on staff, or they've got just somebody that handles the finances internally. Then they have a good CPA that helps them with their books throughout the year. You know, they meet with their CPA quarterly. You know, they're organized. They've got, you know, either an HR person in-house, or they work with an HR consultant to make sure that, you know, all their paperwork's in line, and that, you know, they've got all the, you know, they've got social security numbers, and they've got, you know, W-2s and, you know, or W-9s, I'm sorry. They've got everything in line. And so the more organized a business is, the easier it is to sell. And so what I tell people is if their businesses are disorganized, I'm like, go find somebody that can help you do it. And I, you know, you and Rich are great examples of people that can help somebody go into their business, help them get organized, help them, you know, clean up their books, look at their profitability, look at all the things that drive value in a company. And that's one of the things I tell them. It's like, you know, if you're 3 to 5 years out and you're disorganized, that's fine. We can get your house in order,
right?
You know, and, you know, that's the biggest thing, is get your house in order so that you can sell it. And, you know, I use the analogy of selling your house. You know, would you sell your house? You've got old, worn out carpeting. You haven't painted your house in 15, 20 years. Your driveway is garbage. Your yard looks like garbage. You know, you're not going to get very much value out of your house. You know, take 2 or 3 years, get it in shape, take it to market then. You know, so we're always trying to help customers so that when they get to the table and they want to sell, that they're in the best position they can, we can get them as much value as possible. And, you know, you guys, people like yourselves, can add value to those people with minor changes sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. What's typically the biggest problem or challenge that you run into when it comes to that? What's the thing they're most, I guess, disorganized on?
Oh, a lot of it boils down to inventory a lot of times. Sometimes it's just old equipment that, you know, they're nursing along. It's like they know they're getting ready to sell. So, you know, they just figure, okay, you know, we'll keep throwing a Band-Aid on it to fix it. And then all of a sudden, boom, 2 days before the sale happens, you've got a $20,000 air compressor that goes, and you need that air compressor to run your screen printing machines. And so now you're spending 20 grand the day before closing to get this fixed. So, you know, between people not having a handle in their inventory and not taking care of their equipment, That's two of the biggest things that I see. One of the other things that I see a lot is people call me and they're like, hey, I want to sell my business. And they're like, well, why? And I'm like, well, I can't find good employees. And I'm like, okay, well, why can't you find good employees? Well, you look at their payroll and you look at, they don't offer benefits. They have, you know, they're not paying people enough. And, you know, they're like, they're making really good money in, you know, themselves, but they're not rewarding their employees for their hard work. Mm-hmm. And so we look at it and we go, okay, well, the person that's going to come in here to keep your employees, they're probably gonna have to give them a raise. They're going to have to bring benefits. And so also, you know, you think your value is up here, but really we got to adjust all that and take that into consideration, because the buyer wants your employees. You know, they're not buying the company just for your name. They need people to help do the work.
Right.
You know, so you'll see things like that too with business owners where they're not organized with their employees that way either. You know, they're not paying them enough. But then again, sometimes you do get into some businesses where they're overpaying them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of like, okay, well, what do you do with that? And I had a medical billing company we sold a couple of years ago, and they had a couple of employees that were probably being overpaid by about 33% compared to the industry average. And they were still making really good money, but you know, it's kind of those things that they could have hired a few more people because their workforce was overloaded.
Yeah.
Couldn't afford to hire new people because they were overpaying their current employees.
Yeah. I remember a situation I was working with. This was a healthcare company and they had a really lucrative bonus structure, really lucrative. And they were in the market at a time when their product was just going gangbusters. And we looked at what they were doing and I basically helped them redesign their bonus program. And it cut, I think, $500,000 to $750,000 off what they were going to pay out bonuses. And it still wasn't any sort of punishment to these people because the bonuses were still extremely good even after doing that. So that gives you an idea of how far overpaid they were. And, you know, it's one thing if they're going out and getting those sales. It's another thing when those sales are walking in the door and they're basically just taking orders.
Yeah.
You know, you're incentivizing the wrong behavior there. So, you know, we readjusted to focus more on them actively going out and selling. They were still very well compensated and had a lot of great benefits. But yeah, that was a huge thing because they would have lost a significant amount of money that year had they not readjusted that bonus structure.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So like with your clients that you work with, what's the, you know, the ones that are getting ready to sell, what's their most common question for you?
Rich, you go ahead first.
Well, valuation is probably the first thing that comes to mind. What's it worth? What, you know, and then I come out with a number that they're never happy with, which is fine.
Same here.
You know, yeah. You know, reality stinks. But, you know, we know what the seller's going to do. We know what the seller's going to come in and look at and basically, you know, we know how they're going to process a number in their head. So we can give them a pretty good, pretty accurate, you know, idea of what you're going to hear when they come in and give you your first offer. So valuation's probably first. You know, second thing I think people are a little bit surprised to hear is when we start to talk about what the adjustments are. You know, they say, this is what we're making. But, you know, Dan and I will always tell people, you have to come in here and someone's going to have to come in and replace you. Like, you have to figure out, are they going to have to spend more money to get all of what they need to get out of the equivalent of you? You know, because you wore 27 hats and you had no problem wearing the 27 hats, you know. But they're going to have to go hire 27 people, you know, and they're not going to be too happy about that. So they want you to pay for some of that.
Yeah.
So I think those are a little bit of the surprises, like right off the top of my head.
Well, and what's interesting, Rich, is when you talk about them wearing 27 hats, one of my questions is, you know, getting back to the being, you know, good books and records and being organized. That's one of the other parts of being organized is, you know, all the duties you do, are they documented?
Yeah.
And I always, so one of the questions I always ask business owners is I say, okay, so if you go into a coma tomorrow, is your business going to survive or not?
Yeah.
And when they think about that question, most of them are like, nope. And so, you know, cause I said, you know, cause your wife probably isn't involved in the business. You know, they don't have family involved. It's usually them. I mean, sometimes there's family involved, but a lot of times those business owners, you know how they are. They've got their hands on everything and they don't relinquish a lot of control. And so if something happens and they're gone, how is their work going to get done? So that's one of the things that I always tell business owners, like, listen, start thinking about what you do on a day-to-day basis. Start writing it down and keeping track of it, because that's what you're going to have to train the new business owner on. And it's funny because I had a lady that I sold her business. It was 2 years ago. And I'm like, how much do you work? And she's like, I put in about 40 to 45 hours a week. I'm like, okay. Well, she would call me on Saturdays at 6 o'clock because she was at the office. The office. Oh, I got to get some work done, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I thought you only worked 40, 45 hours a week.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and so that she, you know, I said, here's a spreadsheet. Start filling out. I said, I want a week's worth of recording of how much time I want every, you know, you spend 15 minutes doing this. I want to know, because I said, you've got to think about that, because she couldn't really capture for me what she's going to have to train the new owner on. And it was funny because by the time she was done with that spreadsheet, she had put in like 67 hours that week.
And that's more common than normal.
Oh, very much. In fact, usually, you know, we always say in our industry that sellers have secrets and buyers are liars. And sometimes it's not so much that the sellers have secrets, but they just, there's things they don't think about, you know, and you know, how many hours they work, because they don't think about, okay, I'm sitting on the couch at home with my wife. We're kind of watching TV and I'm doing emails, or I'm looking at a sales, an RFP, or I'm putting together an RFP or whatever. And they don't think about all that time that they're actually spending working on it. And we had a business owner last year that owned a grading and excavating company. And, you know, I work 40 hours a week. And he's like, and I'm like, well, what do you do during the week? He's like, well, I do all the sales calls. I do all the bidding. I do the scheduling. I do the dispatching. I do this. I do that. I do that. I'm like, boy, that sounds like more than 40 hours a week. I said, either that or you're really efficient. And he had no computer systems in place whatsoever. He was all paper. I'm like, I think you really need to rethink that. And, you know, think about how many people do you need to replace you? And so he comes back to me about 2 weeks later. He's like, yeah, I think I'm going to probably need to hire 2 people to do some of the stuff that I do. So, you know, and then in here, being a small business owner, working, you know, in my family's business, I mean, my family is the same way. We wore a lot of different hats, and there's nothing wrong with that as a business owner. That, you know, that's great. That's one of the ways you grow your business. That's one of the ways you get ahead. But at some point you've got to step back and you've got to work, you know, on your business versus in your business. And that's why, once again, working with, you know, you and Rich, Dan, can be very advantageous, because you can help those people understand, you can help them back away and figure out, okay, you know what? What can I, you know, outsource to other people in the organization so I can step back and so I can go on vacation for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks and not worry about the business.
And in the beginning, they don't think they can outsource any of it. So, you know, you ask the question, well, what do people ask us? Well, you know, Rich, they'll ask more of the finances. I get that question too, but I get more of, I want to get X out of my business. That's mm-hmm. what I think it's worth. And, you know, I was talking with somebody yesterday and he was kind of asking a question, well, how do they come up with that number? And I'm like, well, that number is what they need to maintain their current lifestyle if they're not doing the business anymore. Yeah. That's really where that number comes from. And then they do some rudimentary math based on their profit and loss statement and say, well, it should be worth this much.
Yeah.
But the second thing that I often get asked or get told anyway is, I'm burnt out. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this for 15, 20, 30, 40 years. You know, I'm in my 50s, I'm in my 60s, and I'm just tired. I don't want to work at this level anymore. Yeah. And that's what leads to the conversations that you were just talking about, which is, well, what are you doing in your business? And they're doing everything.
Yeah.
And they control everything. And you ask, well, don't you have employees for that? Well, yeah, I have employees, but I've handed stuff off and that didn't work. So then I took it back over because they weren't doing it the way I wanted them to do it. And so everything gets delegated at some point, but then it gets delegated improperly. As your point, there's no systems in place. So then it gets brought back onto their plate. And by that point, they've already added 3 or 4 more things. So now they're the ones getting burnt out. And that's why they want to sell. Where if, you know, some of these companies, they could run for another 10, 20 years really efficiently if they hire people and delegate properly and, you know, treat it as residual income.
Yeah.
Put a manager in charge, give them some equity and give them a first opportunity to buy out if you want. But build up your workforce so that way you could step back and you could take a month long vacation. When you come back, the place will probably be running better when you're gone than when you're here. So that's always the challenge you try and get, you know, across as a point to these guys, because they're so used to doing things one way. And that mindset of, well, this is the only way I know how, or this is the only way it can be done, is the fallacy that they seem to get stuck with.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. They only know one way, and they don't, unless they have somebody come in from the outside and say, hey, have you ever thought about doing it this way?
Right.
Or why? And like what I'll ask people is, well, why are you doing it this way?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, buyers, you know, because I, you know, sometimes I'll, you know, I've sold a couple of daycares, and each daycare that I've worked on does things differently. You know, they've got some commonality, obviously, because they have to with, you know, they're taking care of kids and stuff. But it's amazing how you can have two businesses. They're doing the same amount of revenue. They've got almost the same amount of profitability, same amount of kids, but they do business two totally different ways. And so it's like, well, why do you do it that way? Well, I've always done it that way. Is there a better way to do it?
Especially when dealing with kids running around everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. But but that holds true in every business. I mean, it's true. Amazing. You know, I just laugh when I talk to business owners and you know, you see what they're doing. And some of them, honestly, I mean, and you guys have seen this, I'm sure, some business owners are successful in spite of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what's your secret sauce? Well, I don't know. Okay. Well, you got to think about what that secret sauce is, because when you sell your business, you know, you're going to have to tell the person you're selling it to what your secret sauce is. And I tell business owners, they're like, well, how are you going to sell my business? I'm like, I'm not going to sell your business. I said, what I'm going to do is I'm going to market your business. I'm going to find you a great buyer. I'm going to bring them in. You're going to sell the business to them. You've got to, I said, I'm like a fishing guide. I'll get the fish on the hook for you, or I'll find the fish, but you got to get in the boat, because they said, you're the best salesperson for the company, because you've got to make them fall in love with what you do. And it's funny, because I've turned listings down that would have been lucrative, that would have made, you know, been great success fees. But I'm like, this business owner won't be able to get out of their own way and sell the business. They won't be able to make the buyer fall in love with the business. And that's what they have to do as a business owner, is make that person coming from the outside fall in love with the business.
Yep. None of them want to see that they've got to do more work.
Yeah.
Just to make payroll.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an interesting dynamic when you've got buyers and sellers, and, you know, because the buyers, you know, they want a certain thing and sellers want a certain thing. And I think one of my favorite things is part of the process, the whole negotiation of it is so much fun. And, you know, you've got a buyer over here that wants this, and you got a seller over here that wants this, and you've got to get them towards the middle. And one of my favorite things that another broker told me is that, you know, you've done a good job and you've come to the right price and right negotiations, is the buyer's a little mad at you and the seller's a little bit mad at you, because they both feel like they left something on the table. But if it's only one thing, you've done okay. And, you know, I've had that after transactions where the seller's like, gosh, I wish I could have gotten an extra 10 grand, or the buyer's like, God, I wish I would have gotten 10 grand off it or whatever. I'm like, well, you know, what's funny is the seller told me the same thing. And so, you know, you guys, you're at the perfect price then.
Yep.
So
no, that's good. Yeah. So what do you think's the biggest, how do I want to say this? What's the biggest issue that most sellers need to think of right now? What's the biggest issue that most buyers need to think of right now? So looking at from either side, what should they be priority one, I guess?
Well, I think for sellers is that they need to figure out what their exit timeline is. And the reason I say it is because if you want to be done in 5 years, that's a perfect timeline, because you can start working to get everything in place. You know, you can make sure your books and records are good. You can, if you need to hire some people, you can do that. I would tell, you know, sellers to start thinking at 5 years out, go get a valuation right now at this point in time, figure out what your business is worth. Because if right now it's where, you know, it's the value you think it's at, you know, you want it here, and when it comes back, it's there, you're happy. But if you get a valuation and you think it's here, but it's really here, then that way they can work towards that goal to be able to make that, you know, be able to get that dollar, you know, get that value.
Yep.
For buyers, I think the biggest thing that buyers need to think about is, okay, number one, how can I fund this deal? Because, I mean, sellers are, you know, if you're going to do SBA financing, the SBA is going to ask you to bring probably 5 to 10% down, then they're going to ask the seller to hold probably 5% or 10%, depending on what you're doing. But you also need to really think about what your skill set is. This kind of goes back to the search funders that we first talked about, is don't try and buy a business that you have no business buying. Buy something that you've got a skill, you know, you've got skills in. And, you know, one of the best things I can tell people is if you want to buy a manufacturing company, go work for a manufacturing company, you know.
Yep.
But I think as a buyer, you need to identify what your skill set is. And, you know, if you're an individual buyer, you need to identify your skill set and focus on business in those markets. You know, if you're a private equity company or you're a family company, they kind of know what they're doing. I can't really give them much advice, but for those individual buyers, or even if you're somebody that's looking to buy an add-on business. So if, you know, you've never bought a business before, you start your business from scratch, but you're looking, you know, you're looking to grow your business. Those people, I would tell them to, you know, go talk to their bank, you know, see how much equity they have in their business. See if the bank can help finance them, identify what they can afford, and then start targeting companies, you know, that fit that profile.
That's good advice. Rich, you got anything else to add to that?
No, I think this has been great. This gives me a little bit of insight.
I try and give everybody at least one little nugget to take away. Yeah. So.
Excellent.
A little bit. Yeah.
So, but, Pat, since you are part of a franchise and since there are other locations, can you work anywhere across the U.S. or are you pretty much geographically limited?
So it depends on how the states are licensed. So if you're a real estate licensed state, then that means you have to have a real estate license in that state to do business brokerage. I think there's 32 states that are licensed states and then the rest are not. However, what I'll say is even if I can't help a person, I can find one of the brokers within our system that can. And we've got a lot of great men and women here that have a lot of experience. One of the things that I like about Murphy is even if I haven't sold a business, like I had never sold a medical billing company until I got a listing for one. I went to one of our brokers in Texas and said, hey, I heard you sold 4 medical billing companies. Can you help me? And he did. He gave me, you know, he outlined how the process would probably go. And I was able to successfully do that. So what I'll say is even if I can't help you, there's another Murphy broker out there that can. So they can always, you know, reach out to me and I can find them that Murphy broker that's a good fit. So
excellent. So how would they get a hold of you? What's the best ways to contact you?
They can either go to my website, which is murphybusinesswaukesha.com. They can call me at 262-378-0094, or they can search for me. Just do a search for Pat McAdams, business broker, and I usually pop right up.
Excellent. Very good.
And I could always, I don't know if there's a way for you to add it after the fact. I could always add my contact information if you can add it to the stream.
We can definitely do that, at least on the audio podcast. There will be transcription notes. So all that information will be in there. That will be the easiest way to get it.
Sounds good.
Excellent. Well, thanks again. Rich, how about you?
Best way to reach me is email at rich@xcxo.net.
Exactly. And I am almost the same. I am dan@xcxo.net. And that's who is now sponsoring our podcast from here on out. And we, as Pat was so kind to shamelessly plug us on occasion, we can help you get out of your own way, fix some of the issues that might prevent you from selling your business or at least being able to grow your business. And you should definitely give us a call or pop us a note if you want to get a hold of us. Pat, thanks again for coming in. I really appreciate it.
And thank you.
Very insightful. So it's great to hear from you. And we will have to get you back on again sometime in the future. Maybe when the political stuff has kind of settled in, we kind of see where things are going. Then you can give us a lowdown on if it's good, bad, or ugly on your end.
Yeah, I think after Q1, we're going to have a really good idea how the year is going to go. So
I agree with you. So absolutely. Thanks again, and we will see you around shortly.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right. Take care.